And please the court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. In the orders under review, the FERC eliminated price caps on short-term transportation capacity for resellers, but in the same orders, they refused to grant comparable treatment to pipelines. They refused to eliminate price caps for pipelines in the sale of transportation capacity in the short-term market. In doing so, they subjected pipelines to asymmetric regulation. It is our view that this asymmetric treatment, this asymmetric regulation, is arbitrary and capricious, and the Commission should be reversed. I'd like to briefly address 2 points. One, the failure of the Commission to consider and respond to address the evidence presented by the pipelines, particularly the extensive evidence presented by Dr. Edward Galick. Secondly, I'd like to comment on the failure of the Commission to adequately consider alternatives that were proposed by the pipelines. With respect to the alternatives that were proposed, the law is clear that agencies have an obligation to consider alternatives. That obligation is particularly true when the alternative that is chosen has flaws associated with it, and it's our view that the Commission can and should have considered and chosen a different alternative.
When you speak of alternatives, are you talking about the proposal for the auction that was on rehearing or some other?
I'd like to talk about another alternative. The auction alternative, we believe it was a good alternative, but it was raised in our rehearing request. There was another alternative, however, that we raised earlier, and that alternative was to simply leave the price cap on interruptible transportation service, a very simple alternative. That alternative was presented before the issuance of the order in the comments. The Commission did not respond to it.
They don't need to their argument is that they did respond in the sense that those alternatives didn't address the fundamental concern they had about market power.
Well, Your Honor,
I mean, they don't need to respond to every single point. If a larger point will take care of your objections, isn't that right?
With respect to the interruptible transportation alternative, the Commission said repeatedly in its orders that price caps on interruptible transportation would protect against market power, assuming there were any market power, with respect to both resellers and pipelines. The Commission said that itself. So actually the Commission said that keeping price caps on interruptible transportation would provide an adequate protection and an adequate remedy. What the Commission actually said when they finally did discuss that alternative, they discussed it very briefly in a footnote, and they actually didn't address the merits. They didn't say, for example, we don't believe it will protect against market power, or that it will fail to protect against market power. What they said was, you didn't provide enough details. And the examples they gave of the details that were not provided were, one, you didn't tell us what short-term and long-term capacity meant. And, of course, that issue is actually decided by the Commission. Short-term capacity is a year or less. The other thing they said we failed to address was how to evaluate competing bids. It's footnote 63 in Order 712. That's where they addressed it. And what they said was, they didn't say it's a bad idea. They didn't say it was a good idea. They just didn't address it. They said there are these details, but those details, Your Honor, are the same details that are relevant to release capacity, and they didn't require the pipelines, they didn't require the resellers to address those. The orders don't address how you're to evaluate competing bids. In fact, the rule in question in Section 284, 284E, actually says that the issue of how you evaluate bids is to be dealt with in the pipeline's tariff. It's to be dealt with in the tariff proceedings. So the commission didn't, they didn't really reject it on the merits, and we think that the basis on which they discussed it very briefly in that footnote was not an adequate consideration of that issue, Your Honor. We think that failure to consider the alternatives is really representative of a broader problem in the orders. It's indicative, representative of a failure to consider generally the evidence that we presented in the case. The pipelines presented a 57-page affidavit from Dr. Edward Galick, a recognized authority with respect to pipeline regulation. He'd been a senior economist with the FERC, the Federal Trade Commission, Federal Communication Commission. He addressed the issues specifically. The commission never mentioned his name, and they never responded to his arguments. A 57-page affidavit, they never mentioned his name, they never responded to his arguments. In their brief, the commission, I think, attempted to justify this by saying, well, they responded generally to his arguments. They didn't mention him, but they responded generally. First, I think it's remarkable that a party before an agency could submit substantial authoritative evidence and just not have a response. But if you actually look at the cases they relied on when they said, well, we responded generally, the one case that they rely on particularly, the National Association of Regulatory Commissioners versus FERC, in that case, there was just one paragraph. It was a conclusory paragraph, but most importantly, at least the agency there actually talked about the evidence. They actually said, well, we find it to be too conclusory. They didn't even say that about Dr. Galick's testimony in our case. They didn't even say, well, we looked at it and we dismiss it. There's several things, several aspects of his testimony that one could point to, but one I'd like to specifically mention. One of the main arguments that the commission makes is that you have to regulate pipelines because if you don't regulate pipelines, they may refuse to build. They may refuse to build new construction. That's one of their main arguments. He responded to that. He actually addressed that issue in detail and said that is not a, they don't need to be concerned about that because you're dealing with two different markets. You're dealing with a long-term market and you're dealing with a short-term market. Construction decisions are dependent upon conditions in the long-term market. They're not dependent upon conditions in the short-term market, and it's only the short-term market that's being subjected to light-handed regulation. The long-term market is going to remain subject to traditional regulation, and as a consequence, their concern is irrelevant. He said,
Is that the point, or is the point that those two ideas are not mutually exclusive? Why does it have to be either or? Why can't there be, why can't the commission find, it seems reasonable to me, that there are disincentives in the short-term market if you take away the caps?
Yes, Your Honor, there could be an argument, but the fact is we don't know what the commission's argument is. We don't know because they didn't respond to this very specific point that Dr. Galick made. His argument went on at some length about how the market works and so forth, and the commission might have had a response to it, but we don't know. We don't know what their response was, and that's the problem. If this is, I think, a very fundamental.
Well, isn't there response? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you about at JA 498. This is on the rehearing. There's a heading here that says response to specific comments, evidentiary record. So from 498 to 504, the commission does respond, it appears. So you're right. Saying that that is not a response to the evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. What those sections are doing is they're laying out some fairly common principles. They're citing texts and so forth. And we don't dispute the fact that if you have a monopolist, it's possible that the monopolist might withhold capacity by failing to build. Our point, though, was that in this particular case, that concern is not that concern's not relevant because you're dealing with two different markets. And in that section that you're reading there, they never respond to this.
Again, I thought the point was a more modest one, and that is that again, if you remove the caps, that you're going to, at least at the margins, create or decrease the incentive to add capacity. Isn't that the point? And isn't that all they need to find is some reasonable basis to distinguish between these different sellers?
Your Honor, I think what the commission is obligated to do is to meaningfully consider and respond to the evidence. And I really think this is a very critical administrative law point for this court. If this commission can justify its orders by simply ignoring the evidence, which I think in fairness they've done here, that has real implications.
Well, did the Gaelic data affidavit include any hard data? I got the sense it was more theoretical.
Your Honor, it was what it did among other things. It's opinion. It's opinion evidence. Right. Obviously, he's an economist. He's very familiar with the market. It did analyze the evidence that the commission relied on. It did analyze that evidence, and it concluded that based on that evidence, that there was no reason for the pipelines to not receive the same treatment as the resellers.
So what you have here, then, you have your expert looking at the evidence and coming up with one conclusion, and FERC looking at the evidence and coming up with another conclusion. It sounds to me like you're describing a battle between dueling experts. And
Your Honor,
you typically don't win those, right?
If that's the way the commission had dealt with it, then that would be the case. The problem here is an administrative law problem of a fundamental sort, and that is the commission didn't address the evidence that the pipelines presented. The commission has tried to deal with this in their brief by saying they addressed it generally, but they didn't. They never responded to the point that we were just talking about. They never responded to the point that most of the capacity was actually controlled by resellers. They never responded to the analysis of the data that Dr. Gaelic made. They never responded to the critical point, which I want to emphasize in closing, and that is the fact that retaining the price caps on pipelines may have absolutely no effect because it's the resellers that actually control most of the capacity. He said that. They never responded. That's fundamental. And
I thought they identified a number of instances in which portions of the pipeline were dominated in a way that there was concern about market
but
power.
But the point is, even if that were this is a point about rational connections between facts found and decisions made. Even assuming that were true, regulating the pipelines in that instance, if the control of that capacity were by the resellers, would not discipline the market. It would not provide the protection. There was no rational connection between the facts found, that is, the fact was resellers could control the capacity, they could be the dominant player, and if that's the case, why regulate the pipelines? Why regulate the pipelines? No rational connection.
But it doesn't seem to me that FERC was actually looking at the existing capacity. The way they were talking about capacity was in terms of how do you create incentives to create, you know, for expanding right. capacity, and the pipelines do control that.
Yes, Your Honor. I say I'm into my rebuttal time, but I would like to respond to that. Assuming all of that's true, I'd like to take us back to our first point, and that is failure to consider alternatives. Leaving price caps on IT would have dealt with, assuming that concern were true, and assuming that the commission can sort of respond generally and not specifically to the testimony. Getting past that, I'd take you back to the failure to consider alternatives. Leaving the price caps on IT would have addressed that.
All right. We'll give you back some time for your rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. Luna Perry for the commission. I'd like to begin with the point that the commission made findings both with regard to the existing ability to exercise market power and with regard to the ability to exercise market power with regard to future capacity. And going to the point that the petitioner just made about shippers controlling most of the capacity, I'd like to point out that the commission expressly found that part of the problem in the current market was that there were a large number of segments and even entire pipelines where capacity was being controlled by shippers who were affiliates of the pipelines. And this can be found at in order number 712A at Joint Appendix, page 593, paragraph 25, where the commission specifically points out that on Williston Basin, 93% of the capacity is held by an affiliate. And on Equitrans, National Fuel, and Questar, and this is on end note 30 on page 594, the affiliates of the pipeline hold capacity that is from 50 to 70%. So the commission was saying there are current problems in the current market with regard to the ability to exercise market power, but there are also the problems about the incentives for the future capacity. And because pipelines, unlike shippers, have control over the construction of future capacity, it's also a concern to make sure that the pipelines still have the incentive to construct in the future as opposed to trying to reap returns in the short-term market. I'd like to respond to the argument also that the commission never responded to the Gaelic evidence. I'd like to point out, the commission did respond to the arguments in the order on rehearing 712A, but I'd like to point out that the commission didn't mention Gaelic by name in the order on rehearing because Gaelic was never cited for this proposition in the rehearing requests, and you can see that if you look at the Joint Appendix 575, which is Spectra's rehearing where they raise this argument, and at Inga's rehearing at 536 to 38. You will see that they don't mention Gaelic either. But the commission did respond to the arguments. If you look at Joint Appendix, beginning at paragraph 32 of the rehearing order, 712A, the commission says, the pipelines assert without evidentiary support that their construction decisions would not be influenced by prices in the short-term market. And then the commission goes on for several pages to explain why that conclusion is contrary to basic economic theory, and it refutes.
Isn't it also contrary to our prior decision?
That's right, Your Honor. In Inga, the court did affirm this same.
Well, not only affirmed it, but it said, the opinion says, that if the pipelines observe high prices in the secondary market, they often have they will give them incentive to add capacity, which they can do in relatively short term by adding compression. It sounds to me essentially what you're arguing.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And that is, the commission made those findings in multiple places in the orders, and particularly in order number 712 at JA 491, paragraph 54, they're discussing that very point that you're making, which is that short term prices can affect long-term construction decisions if there's sufficient scarcity, sufficient duration, and sufficient severity to make construction profitable. And so the commission found that short-term prices do affect long-term prices, and they also found
I don't want to leave the point yet, but that would be true regardless whether there were price caps or not.
The point is that in a competitive market, they would make decisions based upon whether or not it would be profitable to have construction. The point with regard to the cap is that the incentives that they would ordinarily have under economic conditions to construct in the future are diminished, because although it would be profitable under economic conditions to build the new capacity, they have more incentive to reap scarcity rents in the short-term market. And so it's a question of, they have incentives based on short-term price spikes, if there are enough of them and they're long enough and so forth, to build. But the issue is, you don't want to diminish that incentive to build by giving them short-term scarcity rents, that then it becomes more profitable for them to create scarcity by failing to build. And so that's why, under economic conditions, that would be true. But without the cap, you diminish the incentive to undertake that construction. And that's what the commission was getting at in 595 to 597 of of your joint appendix in 712A, where the commission is discussing the economic theory about giving pipelines incentive to withhold future capacity in order to reap scarcity rents in the short-term market. I would also like to address the question of the interruptible transportation alternative. The commission, and this discussion you can find at page 601 of your joint appendix, and it's paragraph 56 at the top and note 63. And the commission had several substantive concerns about the interruptible transportation alternative. The first one being that the commission had found in Order 712 that they were not lifting any price caps whatsoever in the long-term market. And the concern was is that if you allowed the pipelines unfettered short-term firm rates, that the pipelines would have incentive to try to sell capacity in the short-term market as opposed to in the long-term market, in a sense kind of evading the price cap in the long-term market. And also, there is the concern, and the concern there again goes to the pipeline's incentive to build future capacity, which doesn't apply to the shippers, because if you give them short-term scarcity rents, it diminishes their incentive to build future capacity. And the other thing is that interruptible capacity does control market power with regard to existing capacity, essentially. I mean, it's the point being that if there's interruptible capacity available, if you're not using your existing capacity, if you're trying to withhold it, then the pipeline can sell as interruptible your idle capacity. But that doesn't have anything to do with the incentive to build future capacity. And so that remains a concern of the commission, which is what they said, ensuring that the pipeline retains an incentive to construct long-term capacity when it is needed. And so those were the two substantive concerns that the commission had with the interruptible capacity alternative. If there are no further questions, I will sit down.
Council, we'll give you back 2 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you. I'd like to respond first to the IT issue, to the alternative issue. We've read footnote 63 several times, and what it appears that the commission is saying, or what they said when they wrote it, was that there were not sufficient details. And the details they talk about is, how do you distinguish the first sentence, the first point is, how do you distinguish between long-term and short-term capacity? That distinction has already been made. that definition has already been provided by the commission.
Is it 1 year?
1 year or less is short term. So we can't understand how that could be an issue that requires further detail. The second point they mentioned, the specific point, is how you evaluate bids. How do you evaluate competing bids? You have exactly the same issue with respect to resellers. You have to have a way of evaluating bids. You have exactly the same issue because resellers have the ability to sell, have the ability to sell short-term capacity at unregulated prices. It's exactly the same issue, and that issue was left really to be addressed in the individual pipeline proceedings. If there are any questions, thank you.
Case will be submitted.